Hey, everybody. Welcome to J&J on Jazz, powered by Jazzwire. I want to introduce my friend James. This is James, and I have dared him to grow his hair out.
This is my friend Jeff, and apparently he started intermittent fasting this week. Are you a little cranky, Jeff?
I was just going to say, man, do not get on my bad side, which is huge at this moment. I'm not sure if you can see. I've got Jocko Pastorius on my shirt, and I just don't want Jocko to turn into Cannonball Adderley, you know, so that's where the fasting's coming from. I just want to make sure
you're hangry. This thing out. You're going to be hangry this whole episode.
Hangry. Oh, man. Well, what we want to talk about today is what we do to stay fresh, right? Like, whether you're just starting in jazz and you have very little to rely on, you want to stay fresh. And it gets actually worse as you get better, as you become a pro, I think, is we get so tired of hearing ourselves maybe play the same thing or approach a chord the same way. So it's real. And whether the adult amateurs that we talk to all the time, or whether it's a pro like you and me, it's a thing. So, man, I'm very interested in knowing what you do, because I don't actually know. I'm presuming you've got some go-to moves when you're kind of feeling like you need something new.
This is perfect. Since you don't know what I do, I can make anything up and you're going to believe it. This is amazing.
That is very true.
You know, what I've found helps me the most, and I, with the job that I have at the college doing full administration, it actually is a challenge for me to stay fresh sometimes because that job involves so much of my brain power. So I've really doubled down and even tripled down on some basic technique things, but as they relate to play in jazz, right? So in order for me to stay fresh, I have to really focus on what for me is the hardest thing to play on the horn technically, which are those little chromatic enclosures that we always play, right? And so I practice real slow. This is not going to be very exciting. Real slow, and I incorporate those enclosures into like really boring diatonic studies. Like one.
Well, and this is awesome because we have been trying to think of ways to get the show to be more boring. So yes, please continue.
Well, so real quick. No pressure. Real quick, one little study that trumpet players are familiar with is this one. That kind of a thing, right? So what I've been doing off and on, and lately a lot, is incorporating enclosures into that. Those kinds of things, taking diatonic things and making them more chromatic, that helps me from a technical side of things, just to stay fresh and keep my edge, technically speaking. So and of course, the other thing that I do is I've been going back and relearning solos that I used to know. I don't know if that is something you've ever tried, but for me, what I like about that is that I already can play the solo. I've already internalized it. But if it's been 3 or 4 years since I've really revisited it, there may be things that jump out of that solo at me now that didn't jump out at me when I learned it the first time. So those are the only two tricks I have. Now it's your turn.
Man, I mean, that is so cool. And sort of a different approach. You know, really one of the first words I heard come out of your mouth was the technique part, right? Like, how do you keep that together? That's really interesting. And now, by the way, James played some pretty hip stuff. So we'll have this written out for you. Those of you that are subscribed to the email that we send out every week, you can subscribe right here to the address below, jnjonjazz@gmail.com. And we'll send you what you saw on the screen there as James was playing. And I'll have something for you as well. And by the way, I want you guys to join us inside Jazzwire. I know so many of you subscribers that have been with me for years have heard me talk about Jazzwire. We have a 1 week free trial. Go to this web address and in 20 seconds, you will be inside Jazzwire, behind the wall, seeing what's going on. I'm really anxious for you to see what people from 25 different countries are getting into. And when you have a question, what did James just play? What do you mean doing an enclosure around a trumpet exercise? Well, of course, that is the kind of conversation we can have. So I hope I'll see you there. So now for me, I mean, technique is always an issue. But for me, when I think about what I'm thinking about is sort of staying fresh from an improv side. And of course, I love that you took the technical stuff and immediately made it into jazz material. So mm-hmm. I love that, because we can just do busy work all day long with technique and little etudes and exercises, which don't really print out in our jazz playing. So I
dig it.
To me, that was a very important thing you said. So for me, I want one new little bit of vocabulary. That can keep me busy for a month. Mm-hmm. One little lick. And so I'm not talking about transcribing a solo or even a chorus or even four measures. I may not be talking about transcribing. So last week, somebody on JazzWire posted this amazing Joshua Redman, Brad Meldow live duo concert where they're playing Olio. And it just goes on for... It's this huge thing. Hundreds of choruses, right? And in Josh's like 10th chorus, the last measure of the bridge, he played this. So this really hip 5-1. The last measure of the bridge is an F7, and it goes to B flat, right? So he played that lick, and of all the amazing things that I heard, like, that stuck out. What was that thing? And so I learned it. It was, I guess I did the transcription, right? I transcribed one measure.
Sure.
And importantly for me, knowing where that fits. It's one thing to learn a new word of vocabulary, but if you don't know how to use it in a sentence, that fancy word is useless, right? So I did understand where that fits. And I think I did consciously pick a 5-1 kind of thing so that it would fit in 100 different scenarios in my playing.
Yeah.
So that lick. So you guys saw it on the screen. And I'll just spell it out the way jazz musicians talk in numerals. It starts on the third, goes to the sharp 5, goes to the 7th, goes to the sharp 9. That little shape. And just those four notes are fascinating to me because that's a piano voicing. Mm-hmm. And I want to know from James, this is like a tenor sax player geek thing to do. I know Chris Potter practices this stuff. I know Donnie McCaslin practices this stuff. I know Josh Redman. They practice piano voicings on the horn. 3 sharp 5 flat 7 sharp 9 is the classic thing you play in your right hand for a piano voicing. So it creates incredible melodies. So voicings are something that more modern players use as melodic material. And it actually flips around that hip melodic material might make interesting voicings.
Yeah.
Is that anything that you trumpet geeks, you know, get involved with?
I think some people do. One of the reasons that I don't, and this is a fault of mine, boy, we're bearing our souls here today on J&J. Jeff started. Jeff is fasting. I'm telling you all the things I don't do right. I don't play piano voicings on the horn as much because a lot of that stuff can be really angular and doesn't lay on the trumpet as well, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
What I do like to do with piano voicings is I spend a lot of time at the piano, probably like you do too, Jeff. I'm not any good at it, but I spend time there. And that voice leading is really important, particularly at the top note of a voicing if it's say using those altered tones on a 2-5, like the 5th. Then going down to the flat 9, like D minor 7, the 5th would be A on top, then A flat, the flat 9 on G7, and then to C major. So building lines off of those top note of the voicings is something that I like to do. So we at least, both of us have that relationship to the piano sort of pulling us in directions that we might not be pulled if we were just left to our own devices, right?
So. Right. And there's that famous Dizzy Gillespie quote of you got to learn the piano, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, no one has ever said to a horn player, don't learn the piano.
Right.
I may slow somebody down and say, no, you're not going to become Oscar Peterson, but just know your way around the instrument, right? And so this is a perfect example. And that is why I asked you the question, because on the saxophone, it is easier to play more angularly, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's more of a thing on the trumpet. So I think maybe that's why sax players have gone that direction. And I wouldn't be surprised that a singer or a trumpet player or, you know, that would be a less obvious direction to go. Yeah. So I tell you what, let me do this. Let me just play a chorus of unaccompanied blues so you can hear this thing in context. So I'm going to play it in the 4th measure of the blues. We talked about this, I think, last show, mm-hmm. that the 4th measure of a blues is a great place to play sort of like a 5-4 thing. I'm going to play it in the eighth measure of the blues. In that spot, there's a five of two. I'm going kind of fast for some of you. And then three from the end and one from the end. It's the five chord. So I'm going to play this thing four times in measure four, measure eight, measure 12, and measure 10, I guess it is. And you're going to hear this sound. Now, the interesting thing is that happens in three different keys. So right away, I've had to learn this lick a little bit, right? So I've practiced this thing a ton just to get to this beginning place a week into it. And my brain is cranking a lot of different ways. So the point of the show, what do you do when you're stale, when you're bored, when you're blah, 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 right? I am none of those things. And I learned one measure from what from some solo, right? So let me just play a bit for you. Here we go. One, two.
And you know what? It did not sound like you were playing cookie cutter or you were cutting and pasting those things in there. All three of those licks sounded completely organic. That didn't sound fake at all.
Thank you. Guess what I was doing for half an hour before we hit the record button? Practicing that. And here's the thing, because of course, when we learn a new lick, we're so self-conscious about it and just trying to play the right thing in the fourth measure. So I've been, for a couple days, I've been able to do that. So my work for the last couple days has been to get rid of the edges. So I know that on the saxophone, on the fourth measure, I have to be playing a B. So for the first couple days, I was just worried about playing the lick, play a B and play the lick. So for the last couple days, now that I kind of know the lick, I'm thinking more about the first three measures and what can I do to get to myself to a B on the fourth in the fourth measure,
yeah,
right? So
okay, yeah.
The lick becomes less about the lick itself and more, how do I make it disappear? And I appreciate you saying that because I'm cranky. I'm angry right now because I could really use like an omelet or something. So yeah. So that's cool that you recognize that, man. I appreciate that because that's the next step. And at the end of the day, I am excited about playing and I'm excited about bringing this into Have You Met Miss Jones or bringing this into Body and Soul, some of the songs we're working on in Jazz Wire right now. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Well, man, anything more to add to this, do you think?
Well, yeah, just real quick, because you talk about incorporating into these things that we're working on to stay fresh into your playing. So I think for me, as I mentioned the idea of enclosure figures and it being a technical exercise for me, one of the reasons I think I gravitate towards that too is that I tend to think of my playing as pretty, I think I play cookie cutter. And I know that we've talked a lot about it's okay to repeat yourself. And I certainly give myself the permission to do that. But when I feel like I'm repeating myself too much, which is often, enclosure figures for me force me to play lines and shapes that I might not normally play, right? They kind of get me out of my comfort zone because they are so difficult. So one of the things I'll do just real quick, and I love that we keep talking about the blues, is I'll incorporate, I'll force myself to play lines based on enclosure figures that maybe I wouldn't normally play if I were just in a regular solo, but forcing myself out of that, out of my comfort zone, it'll sometimes land me in interesting places. I don't know that I would play a chorus. Well, I played a lot of notes, but I don't know that I would play a chorus like that if I weren't thinking, how many enclosure figures can I cram into here? It maybe isn't very musical. It maybe isn't very tasteful, but chorus after chorus, forcing myself to do that, I can discover new things and kind of stumble onto ideas that might be more original to me. So I hope that makes sense.
Oh, totally. And I mean, from my perspective, and I'd love to hear what people out there thought, but that was nothing repetitive, nothing overdone, overwrought. It didn't sound like an exercise. Those enclosures just sound intricate and chromatic and little gnarly and like bebop. So I don't know that you can overdo them. I don't know that you can. You know, perhaps at some point we just want a different shape or a rest or something. But man, that's such a cool way to think about it. And so, you know, and that's why we didn't talk about this ahead of time. I didn't want to know what your answer was going to be.
Right,
and we ended up with two pretty different answers, right? And we talked about the differences between these instruments and sweet spots or challenging spots. So, man, this is fantastic.
I've got something to practice now. This is great. This is great. I've got something to work on. Yeah.
Me too. Well, I want to remind everybody that James is with us on faculty for Maryland Summer Jazz Virtual Edition this summer. We all know that we're not quite sure what the world's going to look like in July. People in some countries can't travel. So we have people signing up from all over the world. I hope you're going to join us. So we have fantastic faculty from New York and Pittsburgh and folks like that. Paul Bolenback, we have Wayne Escoffery on saxophone. Bruce Barth from California is joining us. But then our super special guests, Jeff Tane Watts on drums, Peter Bernstein on guitar, Randy Brecker on trumpet, Vincent Herring and Anat Cohen on saxophone and clarinet.
Wow.
And, on and on like that. These are people that you can be studying with. So if you need a shot in the arm, which is what we were talking about today, how to stay inspired, how to get to that next level, this is a great way to do it. So visit MarylandSummerJazz.com. Grab one of these last spots. All right, you guys, I'm going to go get a bite to eat.
You
and,
should.
And James is going to sit there and grow his hair. So it's all good.
Sounds great. See you, everybody.
Have a good time, everybody. Take care.